Last week, we learned that General Stanley McChrystal had spoken with President Obama just once in the 70 days since taking over command of NATO forces in Afghanistan. That disclosure was followed by a video conference and then by the face-to-face meeting between the general and the president on the tarmac in Copenhagen. It's also been followed by some conflicting analyses. On the one hand, that the president is not in touch with his own chosen commander. On the other hand, that the president is respectful of the chain of command and speaks more often with CENTCOM Commander General David Petraeus and a lot more often with the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs and the Secretary of Defense. Well, we wondered what the history is of presidents and battlefield commanders, so we've called a historian, Professor Richard Cohn, a military historian at the University of North Carolina, who has studied precisely that relationship. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And from what you've heard of President Obama's contacts with General McChrystal, are they typical or exceptionally limited?
I think they're typical. It all depends on the president and the situation. Sometimes presidents, when they come to decision points in major wars, they'll want to have a face-to-face meeting with their field commander. Sometimes it goes for long periods of time without it. So they've relied in the past, if you think all the way back to Harry Truman, on the chain of command, on their military advisors, but often they've felt the need to talk directly to their field commanders and have.
What are some examples from history of presidents who, say, had a lot more contact with their commanders at key moments?
Well, I think George W. Bush had as much contact as any I can think of historically. For a good part of the time with the Iraq War, he was meeting by video teleconference every other week. With his field commander and with other of his military advisors present. Harry Truman hadn't met Douglas MacArthur until October of 1950, some 3 to 4 months after the Korean War started, and didn't meet with him again before he relieved him of command. Lyndon Johnson did not often meet with William Westmoreland. But they did have an important meeting in 1966 in Honolulu after the United States escalated the war with American combat troops. It really all depends on the situation.
From your studies, have you come across an example of a presidential relationship to military commanders that strikes you as pretty much the best you've read about?
The best kind of relationship? I suspect you'd have to go back to World War II. Franklin Roosevelt occasionally met with his field commanders, but he was in constant contact with the Joint Chiefs, which, by the way, at the time weren't yet legally constituted, and it worked pretty well. There was full communication, but there's always a degree of distance and of suspicion. The commanders always are looking to try to understand the president's and the administration's policies. I think presidents are generally, if not suspicious, at least occasionally dubious of field commander's perspective because it's limited to what that field commander needs and the pressures and problems and issues that they face.
Is this a question that is really created by modern communications? That is, when it's possible for people to fly to Copenhagen on short notice and sit down to meet, or when it's possible to communicate by video conference all the time? Did one in years past inevitably have to deal through the chain of command because you couldn't get together that easily?
Well, I think before the 20th century that was by and large true, but you have to remember that President Abraham Lincoln was often at the telegraph office, often in touch with his commanders and not just the one single field commander, but often moving troops around himself. But there's got to be a good deal of communication. The commander has to understand the policy and the objectives and the purposes of a war, and the politicians have to understand the capabilities and the problems and the issues because the two are in constant relationship, ends and means. It's as simple as that.
Well, Professor Cohn, thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thanks, Mr. Siegel. It's been a pleasure.
That's a military historian, Richard Cohn, of the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill.